Yeah.
All right. Hey, what's up, everybody? This is Brian. I'm here with Israel, Vince, and Travis. Travis Ryan, in case you don't know, he's the lead singer of Cow Decapitation and also a friend of ours. So thank you so much for coming out. Long time friend.
It's been a while, man.
Long time here. 20-something years.
Something like that, yeah. And finally, you're here.
Yeah.
This is one that we've been wanting to do for a while, but for some reason or another, it just hasn't happened.
We've been talking about it for a while.
Yeah. But we're fucking cool. Glad you're fucking here hanging out with us. So
thanks for coming.
Fucking amen.
So, Terracite. It's the album coming out the
12th.
The 12th on Metal Blade Records, of course.
Yep.
So tell us a little bit about the album.
God, dude.
how many albums have you had on Metal Blade?
This is our eighth one on Metal Blade.
Wow.
Each one of these things, I've always said, each one takes probably like 2 years off my life. Like, all the stuff leading up to it, the 6 months prior to the record coming out, like, definitely the 2 months or whatever, like, leading up to it are just, I mean, you get stretched so thin.
I can imagine.
Your time and just so much shit going on. If you're putting in the effort. If you give a shit about it. Plenty of bands just put out records and then blah, blah, blah. But I've always taken personal oversight of everything as far as like the back end of shit. Not the songwriting. They do all that.
You know? Mm-hmm.
It's always a collaborative effort. They write all the music and then give me the tracks. And then I write lyrics to it. But I was real late on the game with this one. I think it was like they had like 8 songs in before I started working or some shit. Yeah. I wrote like 5 of the songs like in January and February alone of last year. Something dumb like that. We did a tour and then got home and I'm like, I have completely fucked myself. So I crammed in a bunch of stuff. But I had the concept and everything mapped out for... back to 2015 or something like that.
I was reading about that. Like the lyrics seem pretty smart to me, to be honest.
Really?
If you think you threw them together, I think they're pretty smart.
Well,
the concept was in the back of your mind.
I'm my own worst critic.
Yeah.
The concept had been a thing. It was actually supposed to be the thing that came after the Anthropocene extinction.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm stoked that we waited. Death Atlas had come to me in the form of like I said, hey, you know, to this artist guy, I'm like, hey, make a shirt of a Grim Reaper holding the earth and the earth is burning or whatever. And then when we got it and I was able to see it, I was like, you know what?
Hold on to it.
This would be sick if we really had somebody else, like not somebody else, but if we had West Bensko to really fully realize this in a way that's not just a t-shirt. I don't know. It just made sense to me at the time.
Mm-hmm.
And I said to the guys, I'm like, what if we do this and this and call it Death Atlas? And they're like, fuck yeah. My gut told me to do that. And I'm fucking tired of ignoring my gut. Just don't ignore your gut. It's the only thing you really got, you know?
Yeah.
And I'm glad I did that because I was able to later... I can't say I'm some genius that thought of this shit years in advance. Yeah. It just kind of... You see it, you know, you work with the way things are falling into place and shit. And it was, I was just like, dude, we can, you know, we have those Pompeii bodies, we call them.
Mm-hmm.
Those sculptures on the inside of the Death Atlas is how we ended up at the end of the world, whatever the hell that was, whatever happened. And we make those be like a fucking incubation stage of something far worse, you know, something... Mm-hmm. More
Terracite.
Yeah, horrible and this and that. And so then I was just like, yeah, dude. And I'll equate the entire human species to fucking cockroaches. Mm-hmm. You know, and trying to think of what is... Everything's been done, for one. So it's like thinking of like, what is the best... What's a good way to represent how shitty our species is? And if... Make it even worse, because I don't know what the fuck you're supposed to do after Death Atlas. Everything's dead. Like, everything's gone. I could have started a whole new timeline or done something else, which probably going to do that on the next record. Just, you know, I don't know. Just to switch things up. Not really for any other reason, but... unless, you know, who knows? Maybe something will find its way into this, and maybe they'll grow wings and fucking take over the universe. I don't fucking know.
Okay, so Death Atlas was kind of like inspired mostly just from like a t-shirt design idea.
No. Well, the cover.
The cover, yeah.
But that's the thing, like.
But that inspired like a world building.
What was that?
That inspired some world building.
It's just one of those things where I'm like, I don't know. It just that's why I mentioned like my gut was like dude, hold off on this. Like, maybe what if you did this and this and. I did also find it hard to bridge. I guess it would have been the same thing with between Monolith and Anthropocene, but conceptually bridge that the people, you know, laying on the beach with plastic billowing out of them. Mm-hmm. How do you, you know, jump right over to Cockroach Man?
Right. You found Death Atlas to be like a bridge towards.
Yeah. But, and that was the thing was, I thought we were just taking a slight departure. Instead, I came up with a way to keep it within this realm, you know, within this.
It worked with the timing.
Little universe. Yeah, it's all timing and just, I don't know. At the time, I thought I was like, that's why it's actually the first cover that's a painting.
Mm.
We had never done that before. It was always all photorealistic Photoshop stuff. Because Ben Scoter is a master at both of them. When we first started with him in 2002, I was like, our first two records were more, they're photography-based, showing real objects. I kind of want to do that. Even if it's this fantastical, you know, fantasy land or something, at least as long as it's made up of elements that exist, you know, real people or real whatever. And that's what we did for the most part ever since. And then on Death Atlas, we were like talking about it. I was like, you know what? We both said to each other at the same time, like, I think it's time to do a painting. Because that's what Ben Scoter's known for, mostly, you know. It's what he does mostly for people. And I'm like, yeah, dude, well, I've got this idea. What do you think of this? And that's how that came about. I'm not really good at telling stories, but I can come up with some really fucked up imagery and things that almost kind of can allude to storytelling or whatever. That's why when it comes to music videos, I'm hands off. I'd rather not even do the fucking things. They're just a pain in my ass, honestly.
And I think the fact that Death Atlas came out around the time when everything went to shit, and I mean, it kind of seemed like such a fitting album for the times we were living, you know, right around, you know.
And that's all just, whoops.
Yeah, I mean, it seems like coincidence, but at the same time, it becomes like almost prophetic, I guess.
Yeah.
In a sense, and I think it really kind of, I would think, helped that album along to kind of push it and make it like a boom, you know?
It kind of helped that and that stupid-ass video we did for, that song, Bring Back the Plague.
Bring Back the Plague, yeah.
That's one with the home footage.
I mean, I'm in my goddamn polar bear pajamas. I never thought that would happen, you know? Never. In the 25 years we've been a band or whatever, I never thought.
Yeah, that was the time to do it.
Yeah, I'm going to put, yeah, yeah. And we didn't care. Yeah. It was just like, it really was supposed to be a mirror image of how stupid the times were and just how, you know, I don't know. Just everything was fucked up. Politically, socially, everything was messed up, and we're still feeling the effects of it.
Sure.
It will be for years, you know.
Mm-hmm.
It's fucked up. But you talk about, you pay attention to relevant stuff within the shit, you know, the stuff you're talking about. Relevant things it's gonna come full circle, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like, that's kind of been a thing. So, just, it's how it happened.
On this recording, you worked with Tony Parker from Midnight Odyssey.
You fan?
Yeah, which I liked him.
Yeah. Dave turned me on to him.
Is that right?
Years ago, yeah.
So, how did that come about?
Well,
he's in that area?
Like, Dave discovered him. We're really in, I guess they call it, funeral doom or whatever?
Mm-hmm.
So we listen to a lot of Shape of Despair, and one of my favorites is Void of Silence, who also contributed some stuff to Death Atlas or whatever, but I like the cinematic qualities
big time,
of it, you know. Tony Parker and Midnight Odyssey have it in spades, so when Dave showed me that dude, I was like, oh, this is sick. He would turn it on at the end of the night, you know, like 2 a.m. we're driving down, you know, the show's over and we're driving away, and on whatever, you know, or drunk or whatever. Just, he throws it on and it's just like, oh, you know, I got really into it. So we ended up reaching out to the dude and he came out to one of our shows in Brisbane right before everything shut down, I think. And met him there and then, you know, ended up doing some stuff on this one for us too. Just yeah. being fans. I mean, became huge fans of his work.
Just Another Body, the last song, which is kind of like your epic ending.
Mm-hmm.
His work really shines.
On that. He did all that piano intro stuff, and you know, he does a lot of synth heavy stuff, but there's a lot of stuff on this record. Tony Parker did synth stuff on that song and then just a little bit on the first track, I think. Mm-hmm. The intro going into the first track, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's right. Everything else that you hear on the record that sounds like a synth is all Josh's guitar.
Is that right?
Yeah. He's got all these sick ass just effects and stuff and just some of the
things. Yeah, there's some little melodies and the kind of the going yeah, on and
there's that Mellotron I think that's what it is. It's like a Mellotron emulator or something, that pedal that's does all sorts of super sick shit. So I don't know, I love that part about this record. Is like there's probably gonna be a lot of people going, what's up with all the fucking synthesizers? It's like, dude, that's literally only like one or two tracks.
Yeah,
and parts that are very obvious, like an intro or something.
Yeah, and I don't think that's that odd anymore.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like,
well, plus everybody loves synth right now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
whatever,
that's cyclical.
I always loved that.
Yeah.
And then let's see, there was one other at the very end too, at the very end of the album, the ending part of Just Another Body. Dave Otero actually did that part.
Is that right?
Yeah, we're like, we need some sort of synth here, and we couldn't agree on stuff, so he's like, here, I'll fucking do it.
It's a fucking heavy track.
Oh, thanks. Yeah, I love that one. I don't think we'll ever.
Yeah, it was a good ending track to the album.
Rad. Yeah, it's really sad and doomy and depressing. We the whole point, like, Death Atlas fulfilled its mission. That's exactly what it was supposed to be, is what you hear. This one did too, except at the end it kind of just veered off back into a really depressing end. I wanted it to be the complete 180 antithesis of Death Atlas. Right. You know, mm-hmm. Death Atlas was a very down, depressing, kind of like doomy and dark and really long and drawn out sections and stuff. We did away with all that kind of shit. We did away with all the fucking, you know, intros and segues and stuff like that, just to keep it a little more focused and heavy. And I feel like it's a bit more of a heavy or a...
And a lot of speed.
Metallic or whatever.
Yeah, a lot of fast
shit. But there's also shit... Like, dude, it's funny. I saw someone talking shit. And I saw a comment. Someone go, there's not even any blast beats on this song. The last one we did, the Scourge of the Offspring.
Uh-huh. What the hell?
And I guess there's not. I had no idea. I didn't even... I guess maybe I'm just getting old. I don't know. I didn't even think about it. I was like, holy shit. And I go to Dave. I'm like... There's no fucking blast beats on Scourge of the Offspring. And he like did like a wink emoji or some shit. I'm like, that, just for that, you're bringing back Gravity Blast. Next record, nothing but Gravity Blast.
Yeah, and I think there's another one. Is it Weed or Young? Or it might be actually Scourge of Offspring. That it's a very groovy song. Almost reminds me of a Obituary kind of feel to it.
Yeah.
Which I kind of missed that a little bit from some of the earlier albums. Because, you know, Death Atlas and, you know, Anthropocene Extinction were just fucking beat you to the face kind of albums, but with a lot of melody, of course.
Yeah.
To see a track like that kind of brought me back a little bit to the earlier albums, and I really enjoyed that track.
Yeah, there is... I don't know how this happened, but I didn't even realize until way later that there is some older school cattle slight things finding its way in this record, which I didn't expect. But not on any level that I think anyone really noticed too much, although you just did. It's not like, you know, we went straight back to, you know, to Serve Man days or something.
Right, right.
On Just Another Body, I was reading from, you know, the like bio sheet that the label sent over. Mm-hmm. Is there like any like inspiration from the passing of Gabe on that?
I mean, the only thing is, I had started writing those lyrics, I think, like, so we left to record on, like, on the 1st to be in the studio, starting on, like, the 4th, I think is how it went. And that was the day that we found out he died. And he had died the day before, a year ago yesterday. Mm. So, right? Am I, or am I, I'm sorry, my days are already fucked up, I'm sorry.
No, it's okay.
I thought today was the 1st. So scratch that. But anyways, so I started writing, I knew the title or whatever, and I started writing just little bits. I remember coming up from the jam room, I was really, I went and watched the guys practice or whatever, and I was really just amped. You know, we were about to leave to record and stuff, and I left this one song open. We actually recorded everything in the same position that we wrote them.
Mm-hmm.
For the most part, I think there was only two songs that were switched around. So I needed to, I went into the studio with one song lyrics down, and that were that I didn't have lyrics for. That's the last song. And so I had already started writing them. They were already depressed or depressing and weird and getting like kind of personal, which is weird, like some of my own personal life experience or whatever starting to get thrown in there, or just how I, my outlook. And then Gabe died, and I just really kind of spun out of control. It was mentally and emotionally. I don't really drink much. I don't binge drink, that's for sure. I drank for like 2 weeks straight. You know, the second we left the house, I think I was just like, you guys got any whiskey? And I don't drink whiskey. I don't drink hard alcohol at all. I don't, you know, suggest anybody do that, but I just didn't, you know, I was really out of it. Coupled with the immense stress of going into recording an album for 2 months, gone away, removed for 2 months, which ended up being almost 2.5, by the way. 2 months and a week and a half is what it took. We went over all of that stuff, knowing that I had all this other shit on our plate and stuff. It was just really overwhelming, and I had already had some other stuff going on before finding out about Gabe. And then Trevor died a week and a half or two into the studio.
Black Dahlia Murder, yeah.
Trevor Sternhead, good buddy of ours. And it was just, the emotions were just...
That's a one-two punch, yeah.
Yeah, everybody, you know, for everyone. And I flew back home to go to Gabe's memorial, in which I... This is bizarre. I mean, you guys know, or you probably know. I mean, I actually ended up burying the hatchet with Dave Astor.
Really?
Wow. 20 years later.
Good name, man.
Yeah, dude.
I did know that.
You did?
I did not.
Yeah.
No.
Wow.
The other night at the show, at the Carcass show, him and I hung out all night and talked, you know. And
good for you.
Wow. Yeah. I mean, you know, we hadn't spoken in almost 20 years, and, you know, he was one of the founding members of the band and stuff. And so we had this big grudge against each other forever. But, you know, it was really nice. It was nice. If anything came out of Gabe's passing, that, you know, I mean, that was something that was kind of, it was a nice thing, at least.
Yeah, right. Puts it into a perspective, I guess.
Yeah, well, that's the thing, man. Yeah. It's like, and he made something that really mattered a lot to me was he was the one that made the first move and said hello. Yeah. And that meant a lot to me, just, you know.
Right.
And some of the things he said really meant a lot to me. And it's tough. It's, you know, I'm a grudge-holding... pissed off dude.
Your dick.
That, well, you know, I don't know.
Yeah, and understandably, I mean, we start getting older, mm-hmm. and you start realizing what type of shit matters and what doesn't. And
absolutely.
And to hold a grudge for that long over shit that now you think about it and you're like, dude, that was the most stupid thing ever.
Yeah.
And you kind of both realize, and it's great that, you know, you guys are, you know, speaking terms again. Because,
yeah, it's awesome.
I mean, you know.
Not something anyone saw coming. I mean, no, if you know the story, which right, most right. people don't. Like, yeah, this, I mean, nobody really knows. You guys are San Diego people.
Yeah.
So we've done a lot of hanging out. And, mm-hmm. you know, I'm sure you've heard it from both sides. So it's like, you know, it was nice to, that was just very, something I didn't really see coming. And, you know, I went back to the recording studio just, you know, tripping. Like,
feels good.
It did. Yeah. But it was also like, it was such a mix of emotions too. Like, last year was one of the worst on record, especially for this band. Just it was very, very fucked up year. A lot of change and a lot of stuff just getting jumbled up, and a lot of darkness and sadness, and you know, and then somewhere in there we squeezed out a record that, you know, I don't know. It's weird, man.
Well, like the you thing said, is, sometimes those things can bring you guys together and make you guys like a better band and
yeah
better friends, and even more importantly, so
yeah,
being able to go through all that and
you know, you don't really think about stuff like emotional stuff finding its way into an extreme metal situation mm-hmm. or whatever, you know. But I think after this 2 years of being off and everything's been put into perspective for everybody, I think perspective is a massive word, mm-hmm. operative word for,
and I would imagine for you guys and for yourself who are always on the go with this band, and when you're not, you know, writing, you're touring, and you're, you know, when you're not doing US summers, you're off in Europe and back and forth, and mm-hmm. all of a sudden to just completely stop for 2.5 years, that's gotta fucking throw your head for a loop. I mean, completely.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing. It's like
you don't know what the future is at that time. Nobody, what's gonna happen.
And stuff had just been so weird. Everybody was dying to get back to it. Our record that we loved so much. I mean, Death Atlas was my favorite Cattle record, big time, because I like depressing, you know, doomier, depressing kind of stuff, darker kind of stuff. And that record was way more up my alley than anything. So I was really bummed to see that thing get so hosed by the pandemic, or things shutting down, or
you know,
or whatever. It was,
you felt more of a connection to it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Big time. And you know, it's sometimes that's hard to find when you're dealing with five different souls creating one piece of music or whatever. Like, I felt like this was the record that finally spoke to the kind of stuff I like and the kind of things I want to say or whatever. Mm-hmm. And then with Terracite, it was just like, There was this amount of like, we got to get writing, you know, we got to get into it. That's why it took me so long to get into the writing. Was I was just like, well, I'm still fucking hung up on wanting to do death, you know, Death Atlas shit. But obviously, I'll get to it. I finally did. But
so you mentioned that you like this music that's kind of dark and depressing. And so, like, I was reading through lyrics today from the new album, and some of it's pretty dark and pretty heavy. Well, I mean, but you've had that in the past too.
Yeah, but this one I got a little too close to.
Yeah, so you're a little bit more personal.
Yeah, dude, a little too close to the edges of what I'm comfortable with. Mm. I probably shouldn't have written some of it.
Mm. Like, you know what? I really liked, like, it felt, the personal thing felt, I don't know, like it wasn't faked. It felt like legitimate and like honest. But the kind of question I have on that is playing some of that live.
That's not happening. Just Another Body isn't happening.
No, that one's not happening.
That one's not happening.
I understand.
I'm not doing that.
Well, let's just say in general, does some of these lyrics kind of, when you're singing it, like, take a lot out of you emotionally, like playing it live?
Sometimes. I think it depends. Yeah, dude, like, it was easier to not think about it before. And then the pandemic robbed everybody. And getting back into it, yeah, it was very emotional. Mm-hmm. Like, that first practice, just doing, and doing Death Atlas specifically. Most importantly, Death Atlas. That was the track that really got to me when we were doing it live.
Mm-hmm.
In the studio, and everybody was back for the first time in, you know, 2 years. I was just like, holy shit, we're going to be able to do this. And then we went out on our... That was literally just getting ready for that first tour. January of last year, 2022 or whatever. Which was one of the, you know, I think what people started getting back to it, and what it was, Deicide and Cataclysm in what, August or something?
2022?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Or no, 2021. And then we got going in January. We're like, mm-hmm. I don't give a fuck. Our agent, our manager, everybody was like, don't do it. Don't do it. It's gonna screw up your headline numbers and this and that, and we did it, and it was awesome.
Yeah,
it was awesome. I got, you know, everybody. It was hard.
Sure.
Hard as hell. Yeah. I hate touring in the winter.
It sucks, dude. Yeah.
We're San Diego boys. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah. Now that I forgot what I was going to ask.
Slightly smokier at this
point. Yeah. A little foggy in here.
A little hazy.
I got one. How long did you guys prepare to record the Terracite?
Well, we're weird, dude. Our band is split up all over the world.
Mm-hmm.
Josh, at that point, was living in Serbia, in Belgrade. Ollie, our bass player, lives in Montreal, and Dave was living in Seattle. He's now like over in Chicago. They just got a place, so he's moving there. Like, everything's in the middle of moving. But we've also done like 2 records this way.
So it's you and Bell here in San Diego.
Yeah, I would consider it a San Diego band. So they would literally do it. Josh got the real shit into the deal. Ollie, during the writing of this record, Ollie was, dude, they were like locked down in Canada, mostly. Or I think Montreal had it real bad.
Oh, wow. Or
Quebec, sorry.
Worse than that.
We're talking like...
But this was after the Death Atlas?
Yeah, yeah.
Was written in the...
Yeah, this is while we were writing Terracite. Like, I remember Ollie told us he risked getting... I think it might have just been a really hefty fine, but he risked getting in trouble, either arrested or whatever, but they had a curfew, and he had to make this flight, so he had to take, like, an Uber or whatever, and you're not, like, supposed to be doing it at that point. I don't know how it worked. I just remember being like, what? He's like, dude, I risked getting a fine or some shit. So he had it real bad, so he never really came down into the studio with us, but Josh would fly out, and Dave would fly out, and come here once a month.
Wow. Damn.
Once things, people started able to, you know,
go around. Leave the house a little bit.
Yeah, do stuff. They started writing, I think, for the first 6 months or something of the pandemic, 8 months. We didn't do shit. Mm. I mean, we did that dumbass video.
Hey, I think rule, man.
You seem so proud of it.
I mean, it's just... I just remember being like, well, whatever. It's not like we're a band anymore anyway after all this shit
world's
going down.
World's gone to shit. Let's make a video with a bunch of toilet paper.
Yeah, dude. And TikTok dancers and shit. That was at the point where TikTok was just a bunch of chicks, you know.
Yeah.
A bunch of people doing dances and crap. So... we made fun of
people
that.
People fighting for toilet paper.
We're trying to... It was a snapshot in time. We were just trying to make fun of...
Yeah, yeah.
Everything going on at the time. And so we soon after started writing. And so it was... We had a year and... I think pretty much just over a year to write it. And then you just... They come down here. We... I don't know. They probably rehearsed for like a week or something. And then... drove out to Otero's, going, we'll see what happens.
Load up the trailer and head up there.
Yeah,
up
to the mountains. Well, Troy loans us his trailer and
sweet.
His van and trailer, and drove out there and sat there for 2 agonizing months.
Oh man,
it is the worst.
And he's out. Dave Otero's out in Denver, right?
It's outside of there.
Yeah, it's outside of Denver. And in this little town that is not very...
not much to do?
Not too much to do and not too conducive. Not very good for vegetarians or whatever. Not much to eat around there. I have to drive all over the place to go somewhere good.
Yeah.
We did find a place. We found one place that was pretty close to San Diego Mexican food.
Hmm.
You know, we're spoiled.
We are, yeah.
We are absolutely spoiled when it comes
You probably look for Mexican food in a lot of places.
No, I don't bother. Absolutely not. Because I've done it. I mean, trial and error over 20 years of touring, yeah. I learned real quick, don't even bother. I don't know what it is. I'm starting to think maybe pinto beans or something don't travel very well.
They're dry.
It should be fine, but why is it this shit tastes so much different? I don't know. It's weird.
It's lazy cooks, man.
Yeah.
Lazy
cooks. I guess. You know? I mean, there is a big boom with tacos and shit out there now.
Is that right?
You can find tacos pretty much anywhere. Oh. A little harder to find vegetarian or vegan, tacos for me and Josh, but...
How do you guys deal with that on a day-to-day?
It's easy.
Is it?
Yeah.
Okay.
It's easy.
I mean, I imagine you guys include it in your
especially
rider.
Now. It was worse back in the day.
Yeah.
But yeah. No, it's easy. We know all of our spots now, too. All over the United States.
So a couple weeks ago, the guys from Decrepit Birth and Crisian both said Denver and Colorado had the best weed out here in the U.S.
Yeah.
Do you have any comment about that?
Weed? Well, the problem with Denver is it's so high up in the atmosphere and cold and dry. Shit dries out and turns extremely crispy, but the weed itself dries out and gets really crispy very, very quickly. From what I've experienced.
You need like a humidor for your...
I don't suggest buying it from dispensaries for that reason. Every time it's like you get it and it's just like brittle.
Yeah. Mile high, harsh. I would imagine that it's really dry.
Huh. Yeah, it is. And so that's another reason, you know, I have dry skin and shit and that place kind of... I love it. I love it there, but...
Yeah.
It was weird. We actually... Josh and I sat there one day and started doing the math. It was just like... We've spent almost a year of our lives between tour dates, like going through there and just playing. Playing shows,
yeah.
Between playing shows and recording, we've spent almost a year of our lives in Denver, in Colorado. That's a weird fact. I mean,
that is a weird fact.
I think of myself as an extreme Californian. Like,
Colorado's like a flyover state.
Yeah. It's weird. I love it, though, dude. That is one of the best, as far as North America goes. That's one of the top markets for metal, for sure.
Is that right?
Absolutely. You know, obviously New York, Chicago, and L.A., but those three places, and Edmonton, Canada.
Is that right?
Edmonton, what is that? Is that Saskatchewan or Alberta, I think.
Alberta, yeah, I think you're right.
Dude. It's like this. That is interesting. Nobody talks about it.
Really?
Yeah. It's like one of the. I mean, for us at least, when we go through there, we're like, oh my god! Like the difference is crazy. The place will be, you know, 800 or 900 seat venue and sold out, and
holy shit,
lines at the merch from the second doors open until they close, and it's crazy, crazy. And that's what everybody else, as far as like bands that tour through there, because you got to really do a Canadian tour to even approach that place.
Seems like Canada in general, sick. Though, like a ton of bands coming out of there lately.
It's awesome. Yeah,
they've been having more festivals. I noticed here.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it's a great place to go, man. If you can get in,
that's why I've never been there.
The border there is.
They will check your asshole.
They're really trying to check. They're trying to compete with the assholeness of the United States.
Yeah. with the whole visa situation and all that.
Yeah, they're just... Yeah. Well, they're both... The border people are just... They treat you like shit. They try to break you down. I hate it.
It's like super troopers.
Littering and smoking the reefer.
So speaking of touring, last time I saw you guys play, you were playing with the Monomarth, Carcass, Obituary, Am I missing somebody?
That's it.
And you guys.
Yeah.
How was that experience?
It was sick. It was really cool. Massive venues. It was like that scene in Cleveland for Spinal Tap. That almost every night. Some of these places were huge. And it was weird. It was just weird to see the difference. How different that type of concert place or tour is, because you're seeing that every night. That's where you realize, like, how different. I mean, you know, we play festivals in Europe and shit all the time. You're playing these crazy, grandiose places, but you never really realize the difference between that and the club circuit until you're doing those kind of places multiple night after night.
Mm.
And you're playing these places where you get lost in. We got lost all the time. It was just like, God, having to walk. I mean, you would.
The corridors and stuff in the backstage.
Yeah, yeah. And you would be like, it would take you a half hour just to get anywhere, just you know, to the bus from the merch section or something. Mm-hmm. Just because these places were so massive. But it was really neat to see death metal bands come into that,
mm-hmm.
you know, arena. No pun intended.
Yeah,
it was cool. We played the Forum. That's never gonna. I don't see why that would ever happen again.
That's crazy. I mean, that's where Slayer like retired at.
Yeah, yeah.
Right. Yeah, that's true.
And it's it's Elton John and shit plays there. Billie Eilish, one of the biggest artists in the world at this moment, played there the night before us, and some of her leftover production stuff was falling, like these little things were falling from the ceiling while we were playing because we were shaking the place. It was fun though, man. I prefer a small venue that's packed.
Yeah.
Like a sold out small venue with a sick PA.
Mm-hmm.
That, as long as it sounds good and
because of the good. Because you can't in a big show like that.
There's so many variables, man. Like you're 20, 30 feet from the crowd.
Mm.
There's so much open space between you and them, or speakers, or whatever. Different ways to kill yourself by accident. Falling off the stage and all that kind of crap. It's just weird. I don't know. It's way different.
Mm-hmm.
Now that I'm on in-ear monitors, I like it more. Before it was like, this is weird.
Yeah.
And because you don't know which spot you're supposed to be in.
Well, no, you just your movements are where you can go is. As long as you care and you're singing, mm-hmm. are dictated by your monitor, you know, where your monitors are at and shit. And I would assume same with everybody else. But now I'm on in-ear monitors, and that's a.
How long have you been using those for?
Total game changer. Since we came back from the pandemic, so this last year or whatever, the last year and up till now, they're really expensive.
Mm-hmm.
But. You know.
Do you get the ones that are shaped to your
particular year? Yeah, yeah. That was the thing. We went to NAMM 2020, and right before the pandemic shut everything down. I mean, it was starting to rage at that point. And I got the impressions made.
Oh, great.
Yeah, for free. So they had like a thing saying, hey, free impressions. And so I was like, cool, I'll do that. And then, $1,400 for the monitors. Damn it. And then, I get them, and I'm like, all right.
Now you can't go back.
Didn't get to use them for 2 years.
Yeah,
that was ridiculous. They were like glorified, just
like all this.
Just headphones. Yeah, $1,400 headphones.
Sitting in my fucking drawer.
Yeah, Spotify.
They
have the ones now that you can actually hear the outside too, along with.
Yeah, they have these things, little blockers that you can. I forgot diffusers or whatever that you can.
No, it's amazing how good. That type of technology has gotten for extreme metal. I mean,
Or how affordable it can really be once you get past those initial charges. And I mean, some people can do the shit on their phone as far as the mixing and all that kind of crap. But then there's that. You got to have a guy that knows what he's doing as far as making the shit work.
And you guys do have a guy, right?
What got Colin?
Colin, my buddy. One of our local guys from Brick by Brick, who works at Brick and. Does shows all the time. He's kind of been kind of like you guys for a little while now, right?
Yep. Yeah. The last Death Atlas tours, and I think that was it. Yeah. Since late 2017, early 2018, we started with him.
Mm.
How was it since the pandemic, I've noticed more of the tours have more kind of headlining bands now again, kind of like it used to, instead of maybe one headliner and a lot of newer bands.
Mm-hmm.
How do you feel about that? You notice that too? Or
I mean,
is it a safer? I would think it'd probably
be safer. It seems like bigger bands are like lumping together in tours than it used to be, like one headliner and local openers and stuff.
I think there was a lot of bands that planned on coming back or doing stuff during the pandemic. I mean, dude, I know of two personally that got totally hosed. You know, they were ready to go and things were going to happen. And big bands. And everybody, and they haven't even come back yet. So much, this bottleneck of activity, you know, or everything's moving along and then boom, gets shut off. And now everybody's trying to go through that much availability, you know,
right.
Like just all these people trying to, but that kind of seems to, I mean, we haven't had any problems really from what I can tell getting tours for the most part. It's not that we're slowing down. We are doing a little less than we used to. We would do 3 to 4 US tours in a year. We're not doing that anymore. It's stupid. Mm-hmm. Do like 2, which is still a lot.
Sure.
So I think just a lot of, there's just this very lopsided thing going on. It's going to be weird for a long time, or for a couple of years, I think. But it does seem like, you know, everybody's had enough of the availability or whatever. There have been some bigger bands, I think, that have, you know, like, who saw Limp Bizkit coming back? What?
Why? Well, it just seems like with the cost of everything going up, like Anthrax, like had to cancel their tour, for example, where maybe...
I wonder. Let me see their expenses. I got to see these P&Ls, man, because Jesus, like, what do you... Maybe don't take a tech.
But I just wonder if having, like, more than one popular band makes it more people come out.
More cost-effective and draws a bigger crowd, maybe.
If you guys have noticed, or...
Well, I mean, it's just all relative.
Yeah.
Doesn't it feel like shows are just selling out better than they used to?
That's the other thing, too, right?
Well, right out the gate, I mean...
Yeah.
You know, you had DSI selling out shows. Almost every show that tour was sold out, you know?
Right.
Just everybody... There's so much time taken off. Like, everybody was hungry to get back to it. Both bands and...
And the fans.
And fans. And we saw that coming. I was kind of starting to get terrified. Like, are we even going to be able to get in there and get any tours in? Like, is there going to be any availability? But it seems like it's been all right, I guess. Yeah. You know,
one of the things that we've been hearing with a lot of bands talking about the availability of touring buses and stuff like that, and the pricing of that has become just so out of control because everybody kind of wants to jump back on the road. How hard has that been for you, especially with the upcoming tour?
Well, that... Not so much hard for us, but the U.S. seems to have that stuff more on lock. And maybe I just was able to get... I was the one that took care of procuring that stuff, so maybe that helped.
You already had your contacts like
that,
basically.
Yeah. Well, I mean, just because it's, you know, hitting up... we go through that company bandwagon. I do that. Far enough in advance, you're good. You know? So that was fine. Europe is a whole nother story. The European festival season of 2022 was insane. It was brutally eye-opening and soul-crushing and just, what the hell? It was awful. I don't know how else to say it.
There was less people than before?
No. It's not that. It wasn't that. It was just...
Logistics. I would imagine,
Logistics. That's all. And it was in the middle of the worst heat wave on record or something like that. It was like a record-breaking heat wave over there. Our vehicle had no electricity and had no air.
Oh, my God.
It was just a test of, sanity and just, you know, we've been doing this a long time. We're not trying to live like that. I'm not trying to be miserable, you know. I want to be able to hang in there and have fun doing this. It still has to be fun at the end of the day. I'm not trying to be miserable. You know, I don't need that in my life. I don't think anybody should.
No, and the way you you guys have done in the past. It's,
well, you do it long enough, you're like,
yeah,
okay, come on.
So like, all right, we should be able to be,
yeah,
a little more comfortable when we're doing this. Yeah, yeah. We're doing, you know, 7-8 festivals in a week, and
yeah,
you know, we're going in and out, and humidity is fucking 102 degrees, and yeah, I mean, I can see how that could be a miserable, yeah, experience.
You tour, I mean, that much. I mean, dude, you go to the festivals.
Yeah.
You,
no, and it's brutal, it's just to be
trial.
A fan. I mean,
it's a trial.
And I can't imagine you doing that for a month straight and no air conditioning or facilities aren't, you know.
Having to have enough energy
to
expend on stage, you know.
No, no. I mean, I get drunk and get heat stroke, and I go to my tent and pass out for 3 or 4 hours, and I'm back at it. But you guys can't do that. You got to play
schedule.
The next show.
Yeah.
You got to schedule. Speaking of touring, the Decibel tour with Dark Funeral is coming up.
Yeah.
May 11th is the first show.
Yeah.
Dark Funeral. You also have 200 Stab Wounds and Black Braid.
Yeah.
On the road.
I'm looking forward to that.
Black Braid are cool. I heard they have a new album coming out.
Like, yeah. Really, really cool band.
It's like one guy, but he put a band together or something. Mm-hmm. Yeah, sounds cool. Sounds like something that should have happened a long time ago.
Sure.
Like, that, the concept.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, for sure.
The Native American thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
How did that tour fucking come about?
Well, we have a sick booking agent.
Oh, cool.
Nick Storch.
Yeah, Nick.
And he is good at curating tours. That's like his forte, from what I can tell. So we're working on something for the end of the year, for a headliner for us, where we can really do this album some justice and dig a little.
U.S. or Europe?
U.S.
Yeah.
Sweet. We won't be doing Europe till next year.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
But we're,
wait till then.
Yeah, I pushed and, you know, kicked and screamed, but didn't do anything.
Because you guys are doing most of May and June with this one, right?
Yeah. And then we're doing Australia, looks like, in September.
Oh.
And then U.S. again.
Cool.
November or something. So we're at it. We're, you know, I'm not sure if Japan's ready yet or whatever. I think we're going to do that next year. You know, we got a lot of stuff going on, personal lives and stuff, as far as stuff, so it'll be fine. You know, mm-hmm. Back in the day, we'd be like trying to bridge everything, you know, having all these shows and all sorts of stuff in between, but you know, life is what it is.
Mm-hmm.
So we're gonna be doing a little bit less and making it as quality as we can, I think.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. One of the questions I had is that, I mean, this might seem like a stupid thing to ask, but do you feel Cattle Decapitation has made it as a band? Or is there something that you're still yet to achieve that you feel as a band?
I'm shocked that we've gotten as far as we I've been shocked for like the last 15 years. Just because, you know, I mean, the name.
Right off the bat.
The name. I think we would have been a much bigger band if it wasn't for the name. And maybe even what we talk about. But... I think people's perception of what making it is drastically different all over the board. I've always equated it with, I guess, financial success.
Mm.
You know, as far as like, but that's me thinking of somebody else.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's me thinking of bands like Metallica or Megadeth or just anybody else other than myself. When it comes to myself, and I knew a long time ago that it doesn't pay, you know, and that you want to have a backup plan. Mm. I got swept up in the whole process, the whole, you know, going out on tour and doing all that stuff, that I lost track of what it's of having to have something to fall back on or plan for the future or whatever. So I need to be totally thankful and remember that for whatever bizarre ass reason, our band got a second wind about 10 years ago in the form of fans giving a shit and all these new fans coming in. So I'm super like appreciative and happy that happened. 'Cause dude, 2012, I was already like, well, what else can we, what can be done? You know,
well, but
I'm ready to.
Don't take the fans.
I was kind of getting ready to.
You guys did that.
Well,
you had your second wind.
Yeah, for sure.
And the fans,
it's weird.
The fans latched onto that.
Yeah, but we gained a lot of new fans. Mm. I don't know. I think we kind of always alienated people. Just. The sheer fact that we talk about destroying all of humanity, which we also are a part of, but I'm surprised and enamored by the whole thing. I don't know. I think we made it a long time ago, mm-hmm. as far as that goes. From me personally, I've already done everything I ever set out to do. But and that was
when you got signed to Metal Blade. I was like.
Yeah, I didn't expect that. But I said that to myself like 10 years ago. Like, I was just like, you know, I've pretty much done everything I can think of. I did want to go to Russia. I did want to go to India, China, places like that.
Have you done Indonesia?
I wanted to do that kind of stuff. Not so much anymore, only because... God, what a dumb thing to say. Travel, man. Travel takes so much out of you, man. And it's, again, I want to have fun doing this. And mm-hmm. Traveling is so tough. Mm-hmm. Like, after a while, I'm 48 years old. You know, after a while, you're like, yeah, I remember being like, fuck, we got to do this. We got to do that. And we did that. We treated it like that for 20 years, mm-hmm. you know?
Yeah.
You know what really did all this to me? The pandemic.
Yeah.
Forced to take 2 years off. You see everything in a new light when you know.
Yeah,
like it put everything into perspective for everyone. Mm-hmm. For some people, it made them go, fuck this, I'm gonna carpe diem, man, I'm gonna, you know, seize the day, and I'm gonna get out there and do this and that.
Yeah, it changed a lot of people.
Yeah.
The word of the day, perspective.
It really is.
Yeah.
The more you know.
It is. Like when you say making it. Like, yeah,
no, no, I mean...
That's a relative term.
It sure is.
Absolutely. Everybody has their own definition of it. And
just going back a little bit to what you were saying about, Cal Decapitation getting a second wind. I think you guys are one of the bands who've been around for 20 something years, but I feel that you guys gain the younger crowd still.
Yeah, I don't get
just
it.
Kind of jumps onto it, which is a kind of a weird thing for a band that's been around for such a long time to, you know, you have, you know, 14, 15 year old kids wearing Cal Decapitation t-shirts, which is something that I always found like a weird thing, because I think for a lot of us, we always thought that, Cattle's a young band. You know, they're an energetic young band. And then you're saying, I'm 48 now, and you still have kids that are kind of jumping in and going full bore on Cattle Decapitation.
Yeah, so. And I'm sure that'll change, you know, just because, you know, I mean, they call people like us boomers now. What are you... how are you supposed to argue that?
That feels good, yeah.
How are you supposed to roll with that? Like, there's not much you can do nowadays without sounding like that old man yelling at the cloud or whatever. So,
right.
And I know things have changed, and I barely feel even like part of the... It seems weird. Like, I know I'm embedded in the metal scene or whatever, but like I just have lost touch with it or some or with. Look, man. If being okay with nu metal coming back means you're a metalhead, then I'm not a metalhead. I don't know how to say it. Like,
That's well said.
I'm kind of...
I didn't know where you were going to go.
I'm kind of disappointed, dude.
With fuck you, Limp Bizkit.
I'm kind of disappointed with people. Like
I don't know. Now I hear Metallica on the classic rock station and stuff. So.
Yeah, it's... I don't know.
I don't want to live in a world where Limp Bizkit is back on the radio.
I thought we learned from our mistakes. I don't know, man.
We'll pause here.
Okay. All right.
Oh, yeah.
So going back to the videos, which have been, I think, even lately, they have been a big part of what Cattle Decapitation kind of is now. Videos like, Forced Gender Reassignment, some of those videos that kind of really got some criticism. Some of them were banned outright. Does any of that sort of stuff come into play when you guys are working on the creative aspect of a video? What could this be? How could this be something that could be bad? Could this be something that could be, you know,
that?
You can't really show that much. I mean,
well, the beauty of the forced gender one was we I told the dude, listen, we're going to do an experiment. Like, our label has never really hooked us up on videos. They just didn't really, and I understood at the time, they didn't really see any return from it. Mm. It made sense to them, and as much as my pride that I had to swallow, I have to admit, you know, they're right, and but it did kind of suck. You know, we had to kind of use a little more elbow grease to get videos done back then. So we had turned in some videos that were sick and whatever, or at the time they were. And then on this one, it was just like, you know what? Let's sink some money into a video where we don't have to worry about what they think or what really anyone thinks. And let's see what happens when you put the actual lyrics up on the screen and act it out. And dude, it's just, it was just kind of, you know, it was weird.
Yeah, it was up on, you know, the gore sites. Yeah. I mean, it was...
Well, that's the thing, is I wanted it to reside in the fringes, not necessarily, you know, on some dude's Facebook.
Like, yeah.
That's where it's been for a long time. I'm like, I tried to get it pulled down because I'm like, screw this dude, you know? Like, nobody else should be in control of our destiny but us, mm-hmm. you know, or mm-hmm. the label, or whoever we choose, not, you know, some rando.
Right.
But I always want it to be kind of harder to find mm-hmm. or whatever anyways. As far as that video goes.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, my favorite video, sure, we were just talking about it, was the Death Atlas one by yeah. Wes Benscoter. Because that has so much time and effort and...
It's really well thought out.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a really good one.
Yeah, it's cool. Miniature stuff is just cool, too.
Yeah. I honestly, like... I didn't notice it was miniature.
Yeah, I didn't either. I probably shouldn't have said that.
Cut it out. Because, yeah, I watched it. But yeah. If you rewatch it, you'll think of it differently. Yeah. But, yeah. But
and we did a video, like kind of like a reaction video of it.
Oh,
yeah.
Really?
Yeah, we did.
And it was, you know, we were really laying into the pulling on the heartstrings type thing with the music. That's why, you know, that's another reason why I love that one so much. Was it was very,
it worked
emotional, like, and
I remember showing some friends that video, and they had never seen it. It's the ending of it.
Yeah, dude, I was really stoked. Yeah,
the pullback. It's like
I couldn't believe he was able to do it.
It's like hits you. You're just like, I think
that time you were doing the reaction, you were like, dude, it makes you feel like you're a piece of shit.
Yeah.
I was like, it does. Yeah,
which is on par for Captain Cap.
It makes you feel like you're a piece of shit.
You know, here's the thing. My favorite reaction to our music, or that I've ever seen and been a part of, is seeing people cry. Because mm-hmm. you can't fake that. You know, like, if the person's faking it, then they got, you know,
bigger issues.
Yeah, they got bigger some stuff to take care of. But it's something you can't fake. It's a genuine reaction, and it's very rare. We did it. I guess we did it a lot with Anthropocene, and because I noticed seeing people in Europe, the metal fests, people up front. I remember these two women in Czech Republic bawling their eyes out, and I was just like, "This is the coolest thing I've ever seen." Like, I don't know. Yeah, I've just never seen that before.
It's rare.
So, yeah. And then I started seeing it more and more and more. Then these two people came up to me. The dude was still crying. Like, real tears. And it's amazing. Like, that's a real thing, you know? And I appreciate it. Like, we're awash in a sea of people that are full of shit.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
People are full of shit. They fucking... people are putting their best face, this fake face, it's turned into a fake one, like, over the years. I noticed this many years ago, just on social media, that, like, people are like, why is everybody so perfect and...
Oh, yeah.
All of a sudden, like, what the hell? Like, everyone all of a sudden is so, like, mm-hmm. prim and proper and, like, what? Like, it's like they're on display and, like, maintaining an air of professionalism or something. I don't know. Yeah. It's weird.
It's like a formality.
The perfection and the good parts of everybody's life on social media. And I think music is such a great vehicle to kind of tear those those filters apart, especially in a live atmosphere when you're listening to a band, and then you hear a song that really hits you. It's like you can't hide.
Yeah.
I mean, you're basically, you're either going to cry or you're screaming and shouting along the lyrics, or you're in the pit getting an elbow in the face. It's like there's no it's hard to fake when you're there, so especially when you have music that hits you in that sort of manner. I can imagine being a performer that just kind of brings it into a very weird kind of perspective for you, because sometimes I would imagine you're not really thinking about that. You're thinking about what you're doing on stage to make sure everything's on, logistically is going fine, everything's coming out right, and then all of a sudden you see, a couple of girls, crying to a brutal death metal song. Yeah, what the hell happened? What?
I think it's my favorite thing. Yeah. It's because it's not supposed to happen. It's an anomaly. Yeah. It sticks out.
I don't know. I've been to shows and I've almost emotionally started crying just from seeing bands.
Oh, yeah.
That I know their songs so well that I can't believe I'm seeing it in person.
Yeah.
It really takes over you.
Yeah, it's insane, but it's such a great thing.
Yeah.
I mean, it's like that's full on emotion and feeling the moment.
I mean, those are the times that, that's happened to me, man. I saw Magma, and dude, I've seen them before. There was no reason for this. I wasn't depressed. I wasn't even crying. I saw them and my body it's as if they were just squeezed my body. And tears were pouring down my face. I couldn't stop. I feel weird talking about it. I remember. God, it sucks. Denise and I, we walked up and we got up front. We're like, yes, it's so sick. And some dude recognized me from being in cattle or whatever. I'm like, oh, hey, what's up, man? And so he proceeded to stand next to me the rest of the night. And I like bawled in front of this. I mean, I wasn't crying. I wasn't oh my God, Christian.
Did he start moving away from you?
And I just, it was as my face got beat red and I was just they're fucking slaying on stage.
Going off,
just ripping. It's one of the greatest live bands you could ever possibly see. And it was as if the music was, and I'm not Johnny, ethereal crystal, guy or some shit. I'm not like that. I was honestly, I can't, there's no other way to describe it. I was being squeezed of my juices. And then it was coming out my eyes, and I was just fuck. And then I realized that they were tears, and fucking, I think Denise was the same way, and my buddy Matt. It's the same way. We met up afterwards and we were both like, I'm all, dude, what is this? What is this liquid?
What's this moisture?
Yeah, what is this moisture? It was weird.
So you experienced the fan experience.
That's an honest reaction. I experienced a band just infiltrated me.
Well, I think you can never lose being a fan of music. I think at the end, for me anyways.
Yeah. I mean,
wouldn't you let go of being a fan? Then
hopefully that's the reason people get into it. The ones that do end up making it on a big stage of some sort or whatever, hopefully at least that's the thing that started it.
Keep that feel, hold that feeling.
Now, one thing I was meaning, that's kind of off topic, but you're a fan of flea markets and swap meets, which is what we do.
plug.
What do you normally look for when you're going to a flea market, or what are you hunting for?
Well, besides stuff to flip, which is,
or stuff to flip.
I'm not going to tell my secrets.
You like those real expensive thimbles? Yeah.
I do love talking shop, but there's no off button once I start. But Denise is really into bones. So
she makes fantastic jewelry.
We look for bones a lot sometimes, or she does, and make sure that it's ethically sourced, because flea markets can be sketchy. Not the San Diego metal swap, though.
Of course not.
Yeah, dude, I don't know. I love them. I just love it. I hate people, and I love singing about hating people, but I love looking through their crap.
That,
They're old crap.
Yeah.
There is a nothing like for me going to like Hobie's and just yeah.
It's the best.
That section at the back with all the people that, you know, just selling like basically yard sale stuff.
Oh yeah.
Or moving or whatever. And
those are the best. Yeah. Divorces.
Yeah.
Divorces.
What do you call it? Like estate sales when people die.
Mm-hmm. Do you go to those?
Oh yeah. Or yeah. I haven't had time or the necessity to in the last few years.
Couple of years. Some good record and instrument collections.
Yeah. Oh yeah, but I do all that stuff. I did do it up here all the time, yeah. as much as possible. But the band has kept me so damn busy.
Yeah, yeah.
But dude, yeah, I've scored. I've over the years.
But you're also you're also a collector of a lot of things.
Oh yeah,
yeah,
yeah. In fact. Yeah. I have certain from what I hear, my mom never let it get to this point, but from what I hear, I never was exposed to it, but my family members side of my family had hoarding
tendencies.
Yeah. Okay,
so I think that's why it does kind of
runs in the family.
Yeah, it's a kind of organized hoarding thing. My wife, or Denise, will not let, she doesn't let it get out of control.
Well, I mean, but you have a...
But I have a storage unit. That's what I have. That's why I pay $230 a month. That's why I was saying, yeah.
Yeah.
I remember you need to get rid of that thing.
You were complaining about all the vinyl you had to move.
Yeah, dude. Moving sucks.
Takes up a lot of space and
moving
it's heavy.
Moving sucks. And I've slowly started to finally go into my collection and start getting rid of stuff,
Are you still selling?
You can't take it with you. Yeah, yeah.
Oh, cool.
I mean, you can't take it with you and just... I don't know. I still buy the shit, though.
I know,
you're stupid. I'm still buying it. But that's the thing, is there's some stuff that...
For everyone to sell, how many do you buy?
74 auctions going on eBay right now that I need to check on.
No, yeah. I mean, the way I look at it is, it's an investment.
It is.
Stuff isn't going to make it. Some stuff will end up, you'll be giving it to somebody or whatever. But some stuff will command...
good prices.
We'll be like, hey, you should probably sell this thing. Because, come on, you could use that money right now.
Yeah. Right? And it seems like metal in particular,
it's a dedicated fan base.
It goes for a lot of money. Yeah. Especially the...
It all depends.
Probably 10% of your collection is probably five times its value from when you bought it.
Yeah. Yeah. I did learn something fucked up. Don't leave your LPs sealed. Have you ever heard of that?
Yeah, I've heard of that. Because it'll bend
them. Warp. Yeah. Yeah, you worked at a record store. A very vinyl-friendly record store, so you probably heard all that. I never heard that.
We used to get people that would just razor blade the one side.
Yeah, that's what I do.
And then
keeping the shrink.
Yeah, yeah. But shrink wrap ends up shrinking more.
It'll shrink the jacket. It'll warp the jacket a tad. Whatever.
And then could warp the vinyl.
But
eventually.
No. So if you leave the LP in there, it'll warp the vinyl.
Yeah.
Man, I was so pissed. Did you know that?
No.
Dude, if you leave your LP in the shrink,
I don't have any
in
shrink.
There,
they're all
sealed.
Yeah.
Over time, unless they're 180 gram or something like that, they'll warp over time.
Shit.
Yeah,
a lot of people, when they would buy them, they would just razor blade that one side.
Yeah.
And just use that to protect the sleeve.
Really?
So then I go, Justin Pearson told me that when we were hanging out one night, I was like, no way. He's like, oh yeah, dude, you should look it up. And I looked it up, I'm like, oh, fuck. I went home, the next day I opened, I don't know how many, 100 of them or something. I used to keep them sealed because... Or I would make a little slit and then pull out the download card or something years ago.
Yeah, yeah.
And then after a while, I'm like, screw it. I'm just listening to everything on YouTube or streaming or whatever, everybody else is anyway. I do play a lot of my vinyl, especially now that I was forced to go and open everything because I had a bunch of stuff that I was sealed for prosperity.
Mint condition.
I'm a mint box kind of guy. All my action figures are all mint in box. I don't open the shit. I don't know. I'm weird. And then I go and I open it up, good 10% or 20% something like that, 15-20% were warped.
Jesus. The actual record?
Yeah. So it warps
badly
the vinyl.
Or?
No.
But
not
you can
like,
tell.
You know,
you can tell.
Lasagna.
You're still here fine. But yeah. And then there's like that whole theory of like putting it in your oven, but that sounds like
there's a you take the glass sheets or whatever. It's all crazy. I've seen I've seen people do it. Yeah, and it works, but
that sounds insane.
You have to do it under a certain
super low low temperature.
Oh, okay.
And long cook in the oven.
No, Jesus Christ! Just do it. Sounds like a fucking nightmare.
Yeah, just go buy a reusable.
Yeah,
because dude, remember all that? You know how much vinyl I ruined doing that stupid Metal Mondays for you guys. I have a warped.
And you bought the Blue Mini stock too, right?
I have a warped, a severely warped Death Spiritual Healing, which is
that's what you left in your car.
Disturbing.
Overnight.
I could get drunk with you guys, and then the next morning, I'd wake up the next day and be like. 3 p.m. like, oh fuck, there and I go, oh shit, there's the sunlight is resting firmly on my disharmonic orchestra pungent snap split.
Well, we appreciate it, by the way.
Those were good Mondays.
All that
iced earth you made me play.
Come on, man, can't go wrong with that.
But that worked out well.
I won either way.
It's Church of Capital.
Got you there.
You were warning us. Yeah. That guy's gonna storm the Capitol someday.
Oh god. But all the missed work days on Tuesdays were they were way worth it.
Those were
a lot of fun.
That was fun, but I did
simpler times.
I screwed up some vinyl, man. I got a few like my dismembered. Like an Everflowing Stream original press.
Oh no.
All the good ones. What was I thinking? I was probably trying to impress you guys. I'm like, look at my
shit. Hey, it worked. We're impressed.
Yeah, shit, man.
Everyone's like, oh, he's playing MP3s again.
All right, we had the battery die, so we put a new one in. We want to thank Travis for coming out and just hanging with us. He's been like such a cool friend for a long time. And I'm going to let you know I appreciate you as a friend.
Thanks, babe. You too.
And for coming out here and hanging out with us. I mean, it means a lot. And
oh, yeah.
I couldn't be personally more proud of how far you've come since I met you.
Thanks. Yeah, we've known each other for 20-something.
20-something years, yeah.
Because, like, you know, really started coming around when we signed a Metal Blade or whatever and did all that. Because, you know. Up until then, we were more in like the grind scene of San Diego, or whatever.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But I had always been there doing death metal shit, so or whatever. But cool.
We really appreciate being here.
Yeah,
It was a long time coming. Hopefully, it's not the last time.
No, dude, I want to hang out some more.
Yeah. So for all of you out there, Terracite is out May 12th on Metal Blade Records. The Decibel Magazine tour with Dark Funeral, 200 Stab Wounds, and Black Braid. It's coming around. May and June starts on May 11th with Cattle Decapitation. It's been a fucking pleasure, my friend, as always.
Thank you, my man.
And pick up the fucking album. Don't be cheap assholes. And let us know what you think. We'll hang out for a little bit more, have a few more beers, talk more shit, and reminisce. For Vince, Brian, Travis, fucking Ryan from Cattle Decapitation. I'm Israel. Metal Swap Talk. We'll see you next time.
Like and subscribe.
There you go.
Felch that subscribe button.